Appreciate your time and attention this morning. Thank you for being here. I'm very grateful to be here myself. And I'd like to talk to you about a word here that's not in the scripture. I feel like it's something that's important for us in our daily lives. It's important for us in our existence. I realize that somebody bring me a songbook or something to put on this, please. I realize that the crowd has changed considerable since last night and the day or two before. We went from having a vast majority of young people, and now the young people are in the minority. So I'd like to maybe address our thoughts to those of us that are not young people, whether we consider ourselves more middle-aged or old. I'll let y'all make that determination. But the thought this morning about mentoring, and a definition maybe to start with, it means to mentor means to advise or to give admonition. And it's a form, you might say, of education that's probably way predates our public education system, our college programs that's around the nation today. And just thinking about the importance of knowing how to mentor, what the platform is for that. And those of you that's younger, we can all receive mentoring. But those of us particularly here this morning that's young enough or in the young people category, that you would be willing to be mentored. Those of you that's older than I have things and you could mentor me in. And I'd like to begin over here in Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter. And I want us to, I'll read a few verses here, and I want us just to get kind of a platform and try to draw some analogies here. He says, "Now these are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord our God commanded to teach you, that you might do them in the land whither you go to possess it." Moses, I believe, here is speaking to the children of Israel as they're approaching the possibility of going into the Canaan land. He says that thou mightest fear the Lord thy God to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee, thou and thy son's son, all the days of thy life, and that thy days may be prolonged. So we notice here he's speaking about a generational passing on of information. It's important that we pass on what we know and how the techniques that we have, and that's why there's things that people accomplished many, many years ago that today people are in bewilderment of how they accomplished that. There's the pyramids, and there's other things over there in that region of the world. There's a kind of a sheer cliff over there. I forget the name of the place now, but there's like the face of a building carved out that's several hundred feet up off of the floor of the land there. I don't know exactly how to describe it. And I look on, I've never been there. It would be more dramatic if I had have been, but how did the people do that before they had the equipment that we have today? And somehow life has went on and things didn't get passed from a father to a son and to a son's son. So if we go on here, he says, "Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee, that ye may increase mightily, as the Lord God of thy fathers hath promised thee in the land that floweth with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and upon thy gates." So the platform, the principle here is that you demonstrate by your everyday life the things that are valuable. It's important that those of us that are fathers and mothers and grandparents and maybe great-grandparents, that we demonstrate to the generations coming behind us the consistency in our own lives. As most of you know, I've been a mechanic as trade. That's been my occupation. And if you saw that, even more importantly, if my family saw that it was important for me to drive a new vehicle and that I traded my wife's car maybe 1 year and my personal vehicle the next year, and we kept a new vehicle all of the time, and yet I thought people ought to bring their vehicles to me to let me do the repairs on them. Do you see that there's an inconsistency there a little bit? So he says here that you ought to teach them diligently unto thy children, and shall talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. So it's important to the platform for mentoring is to live what you preach, to know what you're doing. To be an expert. I'm not a carpenter, but if I profess to be a carpenter, you would expect that I would know how to build something, build my own house. If you're a carpenter today and you don't build your own house, then that sends a real mixed message to me. If you do handyman work and little remodel jobs and those kind of things, and yet you hire someone to lay the tile or maybe remodel your bathroom, it's like, I thought you did that kind of work. Well, maybe you do for other people, you say, but you don't, you're tired, you don't want to work on your own stuff. Well, I'm going to tell you, if you want your children and those that come behind you to pick that up, you want to mentor them, you're going to have to live it before them. All right? So he's talking specifically here about following the commandments of the Lord. It's important, if we want our children to follow the commandments of the Lord, to live that consistently before them in our home. I'm thankful that I was raised in a home like that. There was a life that was lived at home that was consistent with what the folks that we went to church with saw when we were in services, when we came to camp meeting, when we were in the home congregation. My parents behaved themselves the same way at home as they did here. They didn't get along while we was at camp meeting, and then at home they bickered and fought. That's not how it happened. So I feel like that I was mentored in that area. There was consistencies in my home growing up. There's been a desire for me to be consistent. I want that to be passed on to the next generation. So I'm just trying to lay a groundwork of how that If you want to be able to pass something on to another generation, and I believe it's a scripturally sound principle, it's something that we need to realize how vastly important it is. If we want to pass it on, then we got to do it. We've got to be able to know the ins and outs of it. I would like to turn now to Exodus, the 35th chapter. And this is about, specifically about maybe more temporal things. But it's temporal things that God put his hand on and he blessed. I'd go to Exodus 35 and verse 30. It says here, and Moses said, Moses speaking again, unto the children of Israel, this is when they were preparing to build the tabernacle. He said, and Moses said unto the children of Israel, see, the Lord hath called by name Bezalel, the son of Uriah, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and he hath filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom and in understanding and in knowledge in all manner of workmanship, and to devise curious works, to work in gold and in silver and in brass and in the cutting of stones, to set them and in carving of wood, to make any manner of cunning work. And he hath put in his heart that he may teach. You notice that? Both he and Aholiab, the son of Ahishmach, of the tribe of Dan. Them hath he filled with wisdom of heart to work all manner of work of the engraver, of the cunning workman, of the embroiderer, in blue and in purple and scarlet and fine linen, and of the weaver, even of them that do any work, and of those that devise cunning work. So we're talking about a man that was blessed of God, I believe, to be skillful in what he has done. And I don't know what all of your occupations have been and the things that your area of expertise is, but I believe that there's representatives here in various areas of how to be an expert in specific fields. But this man here was blessed with something beyond just knowing how to do it himself. The verse said here that he was he hath put in his heart that he may teach. Him and another man was able to teach. So to teach, it means that you are comfortable in what you're doing. Many times there's some kind of sign in a medical office talking about someone practicing medicine. You ever notice that? How many of you would want to take to your project, the thing that you need to accomplish, to someone that was practicing? You understand what I'm saying? If you knew that somebody was practicing and if I was going to lay bricks, I need to go on and start at the back of the house and I need to practice. So that by the time I got around to the front door, that maybe it would be respectable. But to teach means that you could start, if you can get my illustration, you could start at the front door.
Right.
You know where you're going to begin. You're going to know how you're going to lay this out. You know the process of doing that. Over the course of my career and working, I've worked with many people that were unwilling to share with somebody else. And many times it's because they just barely knew how to stay out of trouble themselves. And it's so important for us, in our age bracket, I'm talking about me, to know what I'm doing so that I can teach. Know it well enough that I can anticipate what could go wrong, or how to prepare for things that could go wrong. maybe how to assimilate the materials or the tools, and how to demonstrate a technique that would help another person learn. And that's ultimately where I find myself many times in my job now, is I'm not able to do a lot of things myself, because there's lots of questions in the course of the day. And so I want to challenge us here, instead of just trying to withhold information, you may have said, I had to learn it the hard way, they ought to learn it too. Well, I want to tell you something. That's not scriptural, and it's selfish. And I think that you ought to adjust your attitude, it's kind of direct, and you ought to be in a place where you could help somebody else and be comfortable enough and be capable enough to teach them, because, listen, I'm not going to be around forever, and you're not either. And it's important for us to be able to pass on the things, you know. We're talking about knowing how to do things with your hands and your mind. How to use the things. It says here that God blessed this man with wisdom. There are two men he names out here. But if you read the following chapters, you find the intricate details that were followed in the construction of the fixtures and all of the components of the tabernacle. And it's pretty amazing of what they accomplished, because we don't hear anything about CNC or any kind of mills or lathes or electroplating or nothing. We don't hear any of that. There was technology that they didn't have that we have today. And yet they accomplished some things. To this day, it says in here that they've overlaid boards with gold. I'm not real sure how they did that. I've had some thoughts about that and read some things about that. But they had some abilities there that I don't know how to do. My dad didn't know how to do. There are things that, if we don't pass it on, it might get lost. So I want to challenge you. You know, there's so many areas. Men and women, it's important to pass it on. You know how, you ladies, how many of you can fresh produce from a garden? Can you make a dress? Can you make a shirt? How about your children? Can they do that? Could your daughter do it? Your son. Does he know how to fix a plumbing problem? Do you? Do you know the techniques? Have you showed them the rope, so to speak? Or have you just done it and told them to stay out of the way? If we've just done it and told them to stay out of the way, that's not what I'm talking about this morning. To mentor means you take them with you. To mentor means that you say, I want to show you how to do this. This is something that I've learned. This is how I go about this process. A builder that knows how to get a wall plumb, not trying to plumb every board, but to plumb a whole wall and how to set it up and lay it out. Those are techniques that need to be passed on. So I want to move on a little bit. 1 Kings, the 19th chapter. We're going to end up in the New Testament, so if you think I'm just going to talk about the Old Testament. 1 Kings, the 19th chapter. We have a setting here of Elijah and Elisha. You remember that? You know which one came first? Well, I'll just tell you how I remember it. J becomes before S. And that's the way it works out in the scripture. So in 1 Kings, the 19th chapter, we'll begin reading in the 15th verse. It says, "And the Lord said unto him," you know, the Lord was talking to Elijah here. Elijah, we won't go into all the details, but from our perspective, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years later, I don't know how long it was, 3,000 or so, we look back and say, Elijah, you didn't really have any reason to run off scared. But he did. And he got in a cave, and the Lord began to talk to him. And he said here in the 15th verse, "And the Lord said unto him, Go, return on thy way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when thou comest, anoint Hazael to be king over Syria, and Jehu the son of Nimshi shall thou anoint to be king over Israel, and Elisha the son of Shaphath of Abel-Meholah shall thou anoint to be prophet in thy room." So he said, I want you to go back, and on the way, I want you to anoint some people to be the ones that would follow in the steps of those that's already in leadership. And specifically, I want you to notice that he said, I want you to anoint Elisha to be a prophet in thy room, to take your place. That's why it's important for us to know that mentoring is something we ought to do. Somebody else to come along and be able to fill the gap, to be able to do the things that you have done. "And it came to pass, and it shall come to pass," verse 17, "that him that escapeth the sword of Hazael shall Jehu slay, and him that escaped from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha slay. Yet I have left me 7,000 in Israel, all the knees which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which hath not kissed him." That's one of the things that were distressing to Elijah at the time. So he went back. So it said, as he departed thence, and he found Elisha, verse 19, the son of Shaphath, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen before him, and he with the 12th. And Elijah passed by him and cast his mantle upon him. Didn't really realize until just this morning. I was reading through this again, and I recognized that the context of what he said here, Elisha was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen. Now, when I drive across the countryside and I notice the equipment the farmers have today, it's bigger than it was when I was a young man. And I noticed that, and my son works on those things, and you get up close to some of those machines, and some of the machines that were big in the 70s or the 60s would literally fit inside of these, maybe more than one. You notice how many oxen Elijah was plowing with? 12 yokes of oxen. So how many bottom plow do you think he was using with 12 yoke of oxen? I don't know. But I'm going to tell you it's more than one. You know, a yoke of oxen to pull a one bottom plow, that was a wooden plow in those days, I'm sure, but this man had large fields to cover. That's the reason they have big machinery, is to cover large fields. This man had a career path, if you will. We're shifting gears here a little bit. But Elijah passed by him and cast his mantle upon him. And we could probably talk a long time about the significance of that. But there was a calling here that was put on Elisha. It says he left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, "Let me, I pray thee, kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow thee. And he said unto him, go back again, for what have I done to thee? You know, all of us have to make a choice as whether we want to be mentored or not. And we all have to make a choice of whether we're willing to engage in that. Because mentoring is going to take something out of you. And to be mentored, you're going to have to be willing to accept a lot of things. I was born in this state of Missouri. And when I moved to Oklahoma about almost 40 years ago now, and began working in a Chevrolet store there, they found out where I was from. And any type of resistance that I give them about just following some simple protocol, something that I wanted to figure out for myself maybe, they called me a hard-headed Missourian. And so, one guy in particular there. So, to be mentored, you have to be willing to be accepting of instruction. This is going to get more detailed before we're done. Elijah said, I'm not twisting your arm. It's a choice you're going to have to make. And Elisha went back. He returned, verse 21, from him, and he took a yoke of oxen, and he slew them, and boiled their flesh with the instruments of the oxen, and gave unto the people, and they did eat. And then he arose and went after Elijah, and ministered unto him. He was there to help Elijah in whatever he was doing. You know that when you are being mentored, this is part of mentoring, when you are being mentored, you're going to have to be there on a consistent basis in the atmosphere that can information can be shared. And we could read, you know, it doesn't start immediately give us how that the transfer of power, if you will, of Elijah giving his position over to Elisha. We've got the 20th chapter and the 21st chapter and the 22nd chapter all filled with things that Elijah did. And even the first chapter of 2 Kings. But in the second chapter of 2 Kings, this story changes a little bit. And in the first verse it says, and it came to pass when the Lord would take up Elijah unto heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. So we find here that there was a time that came when the mentoring process had come to a place that it was more complete. And it says that Elijah and Elisha were traveling, and Elijah said unto Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord has sent me to Bethel. And Elisha said unto him, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they went down to Bethel, and the sons of the prophets that, well, I won't read it all for the sake of time, but there was an opportunity given here again to Elisha to back out, to not follow through. You ever been there where you really wanted to know? You really wanted to understand? And it seemed to be too tedious. Maybe sitting here this morning is too tedious for you. Maybe listening to what I'm saying is a little too tedious. But you know, Elisha said, maybe it's not recorded exactly like this, no, I'm not going back. I'm going to stick right with you. There is something that's going to happen here. So he went with him. And as they came to the Jordan, I believe, river, they came to the... You remember how they crossed? Elijah wrapped his mantle and smote the waters, and they divided, and they walked over on dry land. And as they were going along there in the ninth verse, Elijah said unto Elisha, "Ask what I shall do for thee before I be taken away from thee." And Elisha said, "I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me." I'd like to have everything you got and some. You ever been around somebody that you'd like to know everything they know? And maybe a little more. I've had some folks that I've been exposed to that it's like, you know, I'd like to know everything that goes on in their head. I'd like to know how they do those things with their hands. And he stayed right with him. And he said, verse 10, "Thou said, thou hast asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if thou see me when I'm taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. But if not, it shall not be." So they went along a little ways, and Elijah was caught up in a chariot, horses and chariot of fire, and Elisha was able to see it. Verse 12 says, "And Elisha saw it, and he cried, My father, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. And he saw him no more, and he took of his own clothes and rent them in two pieces. And he took also the mantle of Elijah that fell from him, and he went back and stood by the bank of the Jordan. And he took the mantle of Elijah that fell from him, and he smote the waters." He said, "Where is the God of Elijah?" So what do you think happened? The waters parted, and he is able to walk over. Mentoring had been successful. The transfer of authority, of power, had been successful. You know, that's what we want. We want those that's willing to be mentored in spiritual things, in temporal things, and we want it to be successful. Not because we want glory and honor, but because we want the cause of Christ, to prosper in our world. We want others to know what it's like to really have victory in their soul, to see the Lord work amongst a body of people. It troubles me sometimes to think, have I been unwilling to be mentored? Am I unwilling to mentor those that's around me? I want to challenge you, those of you that's my age and older around here, are you in a place where you can mentor others? Help them get established. Know what it means to pray through. Know what it means to rightly divide the word of truth. Get a hold of something that'll really establish them and help them. Because without mentoring, without a willingness to be mentored, there's going to be things that's lost. There'll be things that we just look on in amazement and begin to speculate that maybe it didn't really happen that way. So I want to get a little closer and turn to Luke, the 10th chapter, over in the New Testament. It was Jesus. You believe he mentored those 12 men? I do. Those 12 disciples, I believe, were mentored by Jesus on a daily basis. And then there were more that came. We find here that Luke records in the 10th chapter, beginning in verse 1, he says, "And after these things the Lord appointed other 70 also, and sent them two and two before his face into every city and place whither he himself would come. Therefore said he unto them, Thou, the harvest truly is great, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest, that he would send forth laborers into his harvest. Go your ways. Behold, I send you forth as lambs among the wolves." Inexperienced in a world that could cause trouble for you. Carry neither purse, nor scrip, nor shoes, and salute no man by the way. And into whatsoever house ye enter, say first, peace be to this house. And if the Son of Peace be there, your peace shall rest upon it. And if not, it shall turn to you again. And in the same house remain eating and drinking such things as they give you. For the laborer is worthy of his hire. We could read all of this, but I'll spare you the details. The important thing is that he was giving them last minute instruction. Do you think he told them here anything that they didn't already know? I think they'd already witnessed all of this. I think they had already seen this in action. This is how Christ had behaved himself before them. And many times if you're mentoring, sometimes you get into a habit of reminding someone a torque sequence or asking them if they tightened all the bolts or something like that. And I can see them sitting there and listening to what Jesus said. And maybe some of them, it was a good reminder, and some of them thought that it wasn't necessary. And that's a process in mentoring. Sometimes you think it's real necessary, and sometimes you think it's not.
Yeah.
But Jesus was faithful to them. He sent them out, and apparently they listened to what he had to say. And the Spirit of the Lord was able to bless their efforts. And this is a part that's very important in mentoring. When they came back, they had a report to give. You remember what the report sounded like? Let's skip down to the 17th verse. And it says, "And the 70 returned again with joy, saying, Lord, even the devils are subject unto us through thy name. And he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven." The fall is, I put that in there. He says, "I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Behold, I give unto you power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy. And nothing shall by any means hurt you. Notwithstanding in this, rejoice not that the spirits are subject unto you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven." You know, I believe Jesus was saying to them, I witnessed it too. Through the Spirit, I witnessed this. I witnessed your success. One of the most important things for us to do when we're mentoring someone is to relish in their successes, to applaud their efforts, and to encourage them. Jesus was encouraging them here. You'd been successful. And he was encouraging them in what they're doing. You did exactly what I thought you could do with God's help. So as we go out and think about the future, to be honest with you, doesn't look real lengthy for myself, just because of other events going on, and I recognize the age that I'm at. I want to be effective, to do as much mentoring as I can.
Yeah.
But it takes someone willing to be mentored. And I want to do it the right way. I want to encourage, and I want to give the instruction. And there is such a balance here of us being willing to work together in that. Because if we fail to mentor or to be mentored, there is, the probability of loss is so great. I'd like to back up one chapter in closing. And notice in Luke, the 9th chapter, sometimes in my line of work, I've had those that I've been trying to mentor, and they come to me. You know, it's one thing to come and they report success, and I encourage them, and I say, I knew you could do it. I just believe that you could. And you know, you've listened, we've talked about this, we've followed through, and it feels so good to be successful. And I want to tell you, it feels so good to see a younger generation stepping in and picking up the slack. That's something that makes older people feel good. And I felt that in my job, and I've seen that amongst us as a body of people. But it don't always turn out that way. Sometimes mentoring becomes a little difficult. Sometimes things didn't turn out good, and you have to tell somebody, you're going to have to take that back apart. You're going to have to go back and redo what you just did. Let's go to Luke, the 9th chapter, and notice verse 51. It came to pass, when the time was come that he should be received up, he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. And he sent messengers before his face. Do you think those were some of his disciples? I think it was. May not have been the 12, but it was some in the group. And they went and entered into a village of the Samaritans to make ready for him. And they did not receive him because his face was as though he would go to Jerusalem. And we could get into a lot of tangents on all the whys and wherefores of that. But the important thing is, when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, wilt thou that we command fire to come down from heaven and consume them even as Elias did? He's talking about an Old Testament setting. Lord, these people are not, they're not accepting you. Shall we just call some fire down? Nothing like somebody making an attempt and it failing on in your occupation, and they come and say, well, we're going to have a whole new one. And you have to say, no, it's not going to work that way. You're going to have to take what you worked on and back apart, and we're going to have to find out what went wrong. Jesus said, he turned and rebuked them and said, you know not what manner of spirit you're up. He was mentoring there too. He was mentoring there just like he was when he said, I saw Satan fall as lightning from heaven. I saw the power of the devil being subject to you. I was able to see that because he can see the thoughts and intents of your heart today too. But he said, I saw that. And he encouraged them and he relished in their accomplishments. But here he said, you don't really know what manner of spirit you're of. So sometimes if you're the mentor, you got to be, you don't do this in a harsh manner, but this is part of mentoring too. That's not the way we do things. You think that if they'd have stopped and thought about it a little bit, they didn't really know that Jesus wouldn't act that way? I think they really knew. I think that they had let something slip on their side. I want to challenge us today, no matter where you're at in the walk of life, I want to challenge you to be willing to be mentored. Maybe physically, naturally speaking, maybe you're my age, you're older. But spiritually, maybe you're a youth. And maybe you need some mentoring. And maybe you're a person that could mentor, but you're just not real comfortable yourself. Maybe we all need to examine ourselves today. Where do we fit in this cycle? Where do we fit in ability to pass on You know, the calling that came to Elisha was a life calling, and he stepped aside from a successful career to follow a plan that God had for him. He was willing to step aside from an agricultural endeavor that required 12 yoke of oxen. Not just one yoke, but 12. And he was willing to be mentored by Elijah. And it was successful. I want all of us here to be successful. The more we apply these kind of principles, I believe the more successful we'll be in being able to uphold the things that the Scripture teaches that God has blessed and put His hand on down through life. You pray for me. I want to feel the spot that I should feel.